Chapter 25. 18 years later. Michael couldn't sleep. Even on the higher dose, the meds couldn't stop his whirring brain. He slipped out of bed, careful not to wake Kelsey, and crept downstairs to the basement. 2 decades worth of marital detritus greeted him. He waded through the junk until he found a dusty suitcase. It was heavier than he remembered. The case jangled loudly as he lay it flat, flicking the latches open. Pieces of metal glistened like a treasure trove. He lifted out the severed arm, enamel breastplates, reams of cogs and levers. Realizing the scale of the task, he hastily set down several dust sheets before methodically laying out the components. He surveyed the debris with a heavy heart. Even if he could figure out how to reassemble it all, there was no guarantee it would work again. Besides, would its reactivation somehow summon the ministry to his doorstep again? That very fear had kept him from attempting the repair before now. But things had changed. Olive was no longer a child, and that meant there was a much greater risk at play. The clock chimed 6 a.m. Michael rushed upstairs out to the mailbox. Closing his eyes with dread, he gathered all his strength and wrenched the flap open. Today was critical. With trembling hands, he rifled through the stack of letters. Sinking to his knees, he dropped the pile and wept with relief. Damp grass soaked through his sweatpants as he rocked. 4 doors down, a neighbor's mailbox slammed shut. The man disappeared before Michael could see his face. Wiping away his tears and brushing the grass from his knees, Michael headed inside. To his surprise, his eldest daughter was up. "Olive?" She paced about the kitchen with a frenetic energy, flitting between tasks. "Are you okay?" asked Michael.
"Excited," she gasped.
"There's no mail," said Michael, waving the stack of bills triumphantly.
"There is mail. You're holding it."
"You know what I mean. None that matters."
"Dad, no one cares about the mail except you. God, you're not going to go all weird on me, are you, now that I'm 18? Have you taken your meds?"
Michael's face hardened. "That's not for you to ask," he snapped.
"What? I want you to be chill and enjoy today, rather than go all loopy again," she shrugged.
"Hey, watch your tone, Missy."
"It's not Missy anymore, it's ma'am."
"Are you kidding me? It's been ma'am for like 10 minutes. You want to pull that kind of power play already? At least wait till lunch."
"I'm a woman now, Dad. Get used to it."
Olive stomped off upstairs. Michael mentally cursed whichever ministry official had decreed that 18-year-olds weren't children. He hurried down to the basement and cleared the fragmented automaton back into the suitcase. Now was not the time. He hit it, padlocked. The broken parts were calling to him, but he had to lay low. Like Olive said, he couldn't go all loopy on her. Not today. Mid-morning sun bathed the ministry square. Rays glinted across the gilded inscription around the dome, regulating life to liberate lives. Michael swallowed nervously as he glared at the all-too-familiar words writ large across the imposing building. Kelsey and Olive looked stunning in their finest attire and elaborately styled hair. Michael had tried his best, but having distinctly fewer follicles to arrange, he reaped less spectacular results. Damien and Leon, their 2 boys, joked around with their 2nd cousins who were visiting for the occasion, while Olive nervously practiced the creed under her breath.
"Why are your fingers covered in oil?" chided Kelsey.
"Oh, I checked the car tires earlier. Didn't want to risk us being late," lied Michael. Wiping his hands on a handkerchief, he hastily erased the evidence of his automaton tinkering in the basement. If the others found the broken machine, they'd freak, and there were certain questions he wasn't ready to answer. Val arrived, bestowing a hug upon her granddaughter with the air of an elder stateswoman. Hot on her heels was Michael's sister Sophia and her wife Nina. Despite the occluded weather, Nina was wearing sunglasses, and her cheeks looked puffy.
"Have you got a second?" asked Sophia, taking Kelsey aside.
"Always," smiled Kelsey. "Congratulations on the promotion.
Director, hey?"
"You heard.
Thanks.
That means a lot. When my predecessor announced her retirement, I was worried they might bring someone in from another city. I still can't believe they chose me. Feels like a dream come true."
Kelsey couldn't help but grin from ear to ear. 18 years of hard graft, while juggling a young family, night school, and the baggage of her own past. She'd climbed from being the most junior employee to director of fertility. She was glad to see the back of Hesley. The outgoing director had grown sour over the years as Kelsey's brilliance had shone through. Initially, Hesley had wielded the threat of reporting Kelsey to the authorities for spying in the restricted area as an intern. Kelsey later learned from Val that this was saber-rattling, suppressing evidence as a felony. So Hesley would have been incriminating herself were she to report Kelsey so belatedly. Once Kelsey learned that, she stopped tolerating her boss's foul attitude, and they moved to protracted Cold War, each holding a nuclear deterrent for the other. When Hesley had first given her the with us or against us choice between complicity and prison all those years ago, she had framed it as a duty, almost like she was offering Kelsey a way up in the world. With hindsight, Kelsey could see she was just covering her tracks, making up for lax security and protecting her own record. Kelsey swallowed as the bitterness of that moment resurfaced. She had just learned that the ministry was routinely encoding deformities into newborns, offering no explanation or support to the families. Hesley had been right. It was a fork in the road. Against the odds, Kelsey held her tongue. She doubled down at night school, became indispensable at work, rose through the ranks, all with a single goal: challenge those insidious sacred principles and change the system for good. Finally, she was at the top, wielding the power to challenge the ministry. She was psyching herself up for the battle ahead.
Kelsey?
She snapped out of her daydream and realized Sophia was staring expectantly at her.
Sorry, what did you say? I said, given your top dog now, gosh, I can't believe I'm asking this so soon, it's really not, but we're desperate, and okay, I'll come right out with it. We need your help.
With what?
Having a kid, obviously. Nina and I have been holding out for 8 years, and it's breaking our hearts, not to mention ruining our marriage.
Sophia paused, choking up. Kelsey placed a consoling hand on her arm.
Please, there must be something you can do as director.
Kelsey's youngest son, Leon, bounded over, interrupting with a photo request. Kelsey assured him she'd be over in a moment. Sophia faced away, hiding her tears.
I'm so sorry, Sophia. My center doesn't allocate the babies. It's the ministry who commissions births and stipulate the recipients. I don't get it, but you're the Ministry of Fertility.
We're builders, nothing more. The central ministry are the architects. They tell us what to build and where it belongs, and we make it happen. I know the system's unfair, and believe me, I wish I could help, but it's not in my gift right now.
Sophia composed herself, then gave Kelsey a hug.
Congratulations again on today.
You've raised a wonderful young woman, she said, choking up. Sophia hastened back to her wife, and the pair distanced themselves from the group, consoling each other in private.
Meanwhile, in the thick of the clan, Michael was fussing over Olive.
Now remember, when they present you with your envelopes, don't touch any of them until you're certain. Once you touch one, that's it. You're committed, he said, smoothing the sides of her blazer.
You've told me this like a gazillion times already, she scowled.
And be respectful of the ministry officials. That's of the utmost importance, he continued.
Dad, I get it. I won't screw it up. Are you done?
Olive's fidgeting fingertips betrayed her nerves, so Val came over to patch up the cracks.
You'll do fine, honey. It's as easy as picking a sandwich from a deli. There's nothing to worry about.
Olive eyed up the ministry building fearfully. A rich chime reverberated from the mighty dome. With a gulp and much fanfare from her sprawling family, she began the ascent. Michael watched his daughter at the celebratory meal after. Relief had returned her confidence, and she led the table in jokes and laughter. He, however, was tense. Overnight, the world had become an infinitely more hostile place for his family. He glanced around the restaurant. Were the other diners staring? They definitely were. Michael glared at a couple nearby, his eyes narrowing.
Relax, hon, you're acting weird again, whispered Kelsey.
Michael feigned a casual smile and shifted his gaze, as he'd become so adept at doing. Kelsey gave him a kiss on the cheek, then headed to the bathroom.
When she emerged from the cubicle, Sophia's wife was there, lingering at the sink.
"Hey, can I have a word?"
said Nina awkwardly.
"Nina, you must believe me. There's nothing I can do. I know it's tough, but you have to hang in there."
"There must be something, please. I'm begging you. We've done all we can, yet our prayers go unanswered. It's like we're invisible to the ministry. Like our pain means nothing to them. I'm only coming to you because we're desperate. We're good people, you know that. All we want is a family of our own,"
she sobbed.
"And you both deserve it more than anyone. But you have to understand, I make babies, not parents."
"Can't you reassign one to us?"
"That's prohibited," said Kelsey nervously.
"But I heard that sometimes babies get switched."
"Where did you hear that?" snapped Kelsey, eyes blazing.
"Just around. You know, you hear things."
"Well, I've never heard of that. Certainly not on my watch. We're done here."
"Please, Kelsey, all we want is a baby."
"And I can't give you that, all right? I can't just make extras. The ministry sends the genetic information to us for each child. God, why are we talking about this? It's classified. The conversation ends now," said Kelsey.
Kelsey reached for the door, but Nina grabbed her arm.
"Please, Kelsey. This is ruining our lives."
Kelsey broke free, alarmed.
"What you're asking is both illegal and immoral. I can't even imagine what the punishments would be. I'm sorry, Nina, but my hands are tied."
Snuggled in bed, Kelsey and Michael reflected on the day.
"I can't believe our baby girl's an adult," said Michael.
"Mm-hmm," said Kelsey, distracted. Michael rolled onto his elbow.
"You okay?"
"Something your sister said. Nina, too. They both want me to work miracles."
"I'm sorry. I shouldn't have suggested it."
"You told them to speak to me? Michael, what were you thinking?"
"I was thinking maybe my wife, the director of fertility, could help my sister and her wife have a baby."
"That's not how it works," groaned Kelsey.
"They're two of the most caring people in this city. Surely they deserve..."
"Why do people suddenly think I control this? Our department has never been involved with assignments. How many times do I have to say it?"
Michael pondered for a moment, then lowered his voice.
"Could you bump them up the waiting list?"
"There is no waiting list! There are recipients, and that's it. Who gets what is decided before the letters go out. What you're asking is impossible, not to mention unfair. Drop it," snapped Kelsey.
She flicked her lamp off, huffing into the darkness. Dejected, Michael rolled over, glancing at his bedside clock. 7 hours until the morning mail. 7 hours to Olive's fate.